Voila, old lady flesh. The skin on the feet and hands is thicker than the skin on the rest of the body, and therefore makes any changes more noticeable. As the epidermis expands, the layer below it, the dermis, does not swell, so the epidermis buckles in areas. Lovely, right? Is it more sanitary to be spit on or peed on? There is no specific course in medical school to deal with all the secretions that you find yourself faced with as a doctor. It is definitely a rude awakening to find yourself being coughed on, spit on, and even urinated on. All doctors have been doused in a variety of bodily fluids. One wonderful evening in the ER, I heard a nurse screaming. I found her desperately trying to keep a drunk patient who had passed out from hitting the floor. He was not a small man, and the dead weight was too much to manage. The only way I could get him back on the stretcher was to grab him from behind and throw myself on the stretcher with the patient on top of me. Simple. I could then just roll him over. I unfortunately didn't plan on him using me as a bedpan the instant we hit the bed. This is disgusting, of course, but when faced with the option of being urinated on or spat on, I would choose urine. No, this is not a fetish. Normal urine is sterile. It contains fluids, salts, and waste products, but it is free of bacteria, viruses, and fungi. It is not always fragrant, but is certainly cleaner than spit. Spit contains large amounts of bacteria, and thus is filthy. Why do beans give you gas? It is unbelievable how much information there is available about farts. Flatulence is the subject of numerous medical studies, books, and CDs. One company even makes a fart filter and underpants designed to absorb odor. But among all this gaseous information, it always comes back to the bean, the most famous farting food. Beans contain high percentages of sugars, oligosaccharides, that our bodies are unable to digest. When these sugars make it to our intestines, bacteria go to work and start producing large amounts of gas. We also form gas from other sources, including the air we swallow, gas that seeps into our intestines from the bloodstream, and carbon dioxide, formed from saliva reacting with stomach acid. There is some help available for those who can't handle their beans. A product called Beano is readily available. Beano contains a food enzyme extracted from mold, 1-alpha-galactosidase, that helps us to break down the complex sugars in gassy foods. Another method is to soak beans before you cook them, as this cuts down on their gas-producing power if you then discard the water. Unfortunately, you also lose some water-soluble vitamins by doing this. Other flatulogenic foods are broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cooked cabbage, raw apples, radishes, onions, cucumbers, melons, coffee, peanuts, eggs, oranges, tomatoes, strawberries, milk, and raisins. Notice the abundance of vegetables on the fart-producing list? That is why those vegetarians are always passing wind in yoga classes as they contort themselves into weird positions. Would you die if you ate your own feces? There is a psychiatric illness called coprophagia, the eating of one's own feces. It is an uncommonly reported symptom that can be seen in patients with schizophrenia, alcoholism, dementia, depression, Kluver-Bucy syndrome, ask Mark, and obsessive-compulsive disorder. Scatolia, the smearing of feces, is often seen in psychiatric hospitals. High-functioning individuals may sometimes exhibit coprophagia as part of a paraphilia or abnormal sexual arousal disorder. There are even some claims that Eva Braun urinated and defecated on Adolf Hitler. Sexy. You can get very sick by eating feces. It shouldn't be fatal, but complications from snacking on shit include hepatitis, oral infection, abscess, and a variety of other infectious diseases. Beside that, think of the morning breath. And back to the instant messaging we go. 12:05 p.m. Lehner. Be right there. Goldberg. Okay, I gotta run to the bathroom. 12:15 p.m. Goldberg. I have returned. Lehner. Did you wipe standing up? Some people do, I've heard. Goldberg. Stop mocking me. You know I am sensitive about being a stander. Lehner. I'm sorry. You know, sometimes I pee sitting down out of pure laziness. Goldberg. That is what they should teach you in school. Bathroom etiquette. Lehner. They should teach boys that they don't have to stand up, that it's an option. 12:20 p.m. Lehner. When my niece was a little girl, she said a great thing once on the way back from a little skiing excursion in Lenox, Massachusetts. Goldberg. And what were these words of wisdom? Lehner. It was quiet in the car, and all of a sudden she piped up. I didn't fart, but I'd open a window if I were you. Goldberg. With all the new technology, they should make an automatic sensor that senses the gas and opens the window. Lehner. I hate going into a bathroom in a fancy restaurant where they have an attendant in there. A men's room seems to be the one place on earth where Emersonian self-reliance should be the rule. Goldberg. I know. I don't really need assistance getting the paper towel out of the dispenser. Lehner. There's really nothing that goes on in a men's room that I can't handle myself. Goldberg. You end up feeling so guilty that you have to give the poor bastard a tip. 12:25 p.m. Lehner. You know that expression for waiters and cooks when they spend their day off at the place they work? Bellman's holiday or something? Wonder if there's an equivalent for men's room attendance. Look that expression up online, will you? Bellman's holiday? Goldberg. They probably can't urinate or defecate at home because it reminds them of work. Lehner. What about the people who check stool samples all day, like at that place Jetty Katz? You know that lab? Goldberg. What the hell are you talking about? Lehner. There's a lab I went to once when my cousin, my gastroenterologist, thought I might have picked up some exotic parasite in Tierra del Fuego. Goldberg. Jetty Katz sounds like a performer in the Catskills. 12:30 p.m. Lehner. So he sent me to this lab that specializes in analyzing stool for parasite eggs. Jetty Katz or Jedi Katz or something like that. Someplace in Upper Manhattan. Goldberg. The Jedi Katz sounds like a band. I love their music. Lehner. Anyway, they have these women who work there, and what they do all day is handle hot, steaming, fresh stool samples. The whole experience is indelible in my brain. Goldberg. Indelible or inedible? Lehner. First you down some... What's that laxative they give you? It has a catchy name. Goldberg. Go lightly? Lehner. Works mighty fast. Know what I'm talking about? Goldberg. Nothing light about it. Lehner. What's it called? Help me out here. Goldberg. Not go lightly? Lehner. No. Goldberg. Lactulose, sorbitol, milk of magnesia, cascara, Dulcolax? Lehner. Dulcolax, I think. Goldberg. Magnesium citrate. Dulcolax. The Duke. Lehner. Dulcolax. Yes! Anyway, they make you drink that. Then, a dozen or so people vie for 3 bathrooms. It's like some debased Japanese game show. Goldberg. We could be huge in Japan. Lehner. We already are. Goldberg. Did your book sell internationally? Lehner. That's the strange thing about Japan. You can be famous there, have malls named after you, etc., etc., and never know it. Goldberg, I am pretty sure there is no Billy Goldberg Mall in Kyoto. Lehner, one of my books has been published in Japan, and all of them in Great Britain, Italy, and France, and Chechnya, I think. I'm like the Dr. Seuss of Chechnya. Will you get hemorrhoids from sitting on the toilet too long? We have no pretensions about this book, and we expect it to be found in that precious spot right next to the toilet. For that reason, we fear we need to warn you that sitting too long on the throne may cause hemorrhoids. Unfortunately, this one's not an old wives' tale. Hemorrhoids, or piles, are abnormally swollen veins in the rectum and anus. They are similar to the varicose veins you might see on a person's legs at the beach. It's estimated that about 100 million Americans are currently suffering from hemorrhoids. More than half of the U.S. population develops hemorrhoids by age 50. The most frequent cause of hemorrhoids are constant sitting, straining with bowel movements from constipation or hard stools, prolonged sitting on the toilet, severe coughing, giving birth, and heavy lifting. It has also been suggested that the Western diet, which is rich in processed food and lacking in fiber, contributes to hemorrhoids. Sitting on the toilet too long is problematic because this is the only time that the anus truly relaxes, allowing the veins down there to fill completely with blood. To prevent this problem, you should move your bowels as soon as possible after the urge occurs. If you cannot go right away, pick up our book. We expect it to be toilet reading, but read as you walk. You can always return to finish the job. Why does poo stink if the food doesn't? We don't want to create any cultural stereotypes here, but most of the bathroom questions came from folks from down under. Yes, two Aussie friends seem to ask many questions about their bowels. Everything that happens in the intestine seems to have something to do with the production of gases and sulfur compounds. The bacteria inside feces is what makes it smell so bad. Specifically, the bacteria produce various compounds and gases that lead to the wonderful smell of a bus station bathroom. The smell of your stool can be affected by medical conditions or your diet. Fatty stools and bloody stools are known to be particularly malodorous. In the hospital, a large, ripe poo is known as a code brown. How's that for real insider knowledge? Why does poo float? Some people seem to be obsessed with the creation of the perfect poo. My brother even called me in to examine his works of art. A true bonding moment for young boys. Another friend described his perfect moment for us when he produced the cobra, one that coiled around and poked its head out of the bowl. There is something about dropping the kids off at the pool that makes us all smile. So laugh if you must, but we're sure you've wondered why some poos are floaters. It is gas that makes poo float. Increased levels of air and gas make it less dense and therefore cause it to float. Why is poo brown? It is very common to have people ask about the color of their stool to figure out how it relates to disease. There are definitely some color changes that can be cause for concern, but in general, assessing stool color is no exact science. Feces are mostly shades of brown or yellow because of the presence of an orange-yellow substance called bilirubin. Bilirubin combines with iron in the intestine to give the combo a beautiful brown color. Poo does, however, have a rainbow of possibilities. Black. A black stool, melena, can mean that blood is coming from the upper part of the gastrointestinal tract, the esophagus, stomach, or first part of the small intestine. Other things that can cause black stool are black licorice, lead, iron pills, Pepto-Bismol, or blueberries. Green. Green leafy vegetables contain chlorophyll, which can color the stool green. Green feces can also occur with diarrhea if bile passes through the intestine unchanged. In breastfed babies, green stool is a normal occurrence, especially right after delivery. Red. Maroon stool, or bright red blood in poo, usually suggests that the blood is coming from the lower part of the GI tract. Hemorrhoids and diverticulitis are the most common causes of red blood in the stool. Beets and tomatoes can also make stools appear reddish. Gray. Diseases of the liver, pancreas, and gallbladder can cause pale or gray stool. Yellow. One condition that can cause yellow stool is a parasitic infection known as Giardia. Giardia also causes significant diarrhea. Another cause of yellow poo is a condition known as Gilbert's syndrome. This is a fairly common genetic disorder that causes an increase in your level of bilirubin. Gilbert's syndrome is rarely dangerous. Where does gas go when you can't fart? Some people like to think of their lower gastrointestinal tract as a one-way street. One time, during a rectal examination during a trauma, a frightened young man screamed out as the doctor was placing his finger in the man's rectum, "Whoa, that's an exit!" Flatulence follows the same rule. Gas goes out, or it simply goes away. If you are stranded on a desert island, should you drink seawater or your own urine? Seawater is more than 3 times as concentrated as blood. Humans shouldn't drink salt water because it forces your body to deal with a solution that is more concentrated than its own fluids. In order to get rid of the excess salt, your body must excrete it through the kidneys as urine. The kidneys can only make urine that is less salty than salt water, so if you drink seawater, you'll be peeing a lot and losing an excess of water. This would cause your body to become dehydrated, leaving an excess of sodium in your bloodstream. Water would then leave all your other cells to enter the bloodstream. This would cause the cells to shrink and malfunction. As a result, muscles would become weak and ache. The heart would beat irregularly. You would become confused, and ultimately, you would die. Drinking urine is probably safer than seawater, but the catch-22 is that if you don't have any water to drink, you will become dehydrated and not produce any urine. The best bet is to not get shipwrecked, and if you do, hope for rain. Can you catch diseases from a toilet seat? By doing research, we found reports of gonorrhea, toilet seat dermatitis, infragluteal eczema, Ascaris lumbricoides, roundworm, and Enterobius vermicularis, pinworm. We know what you're thinking. After carefully washing our hands, we went back to our computers and came across more information. Yes, occasionally you can catch something from a public toilet seat, but this isn't all that common. Work, on the other hand, may be worse for your health than toilet seats. A microbiologist at the University of Arizona, Charles Gerba, found that the typical office desk harbors around 400 times more disease-causing bacteria than the average toilet seat. Here is the bacteria count. Telephone, 3,894 germs per square centimeter. Keyboard, 511 germs per square centimeter. Computer mouse, 260 germs per square centimeter. Toilet seat, priceless. Why do I have to go to the bathroom immediately after a cup of coffee? In our house, we call it the coffee alarm. Nothing is more reliable. Coffee is definitely known to have a laxative effect. The caffeine in coffee speeds up every system in the body, including the bowels. But when used excessively, caffeine can interfere with the bowel's normal contractions and lead to constipation. Decaffeinated coffee does away with the caffeine, but it still acts as a bowel irritant. Why do cigarettes have a laxative effect? There is nothing better for some than the morning cup of joe and a cigarette, followed by the morning constitutional. Caffeinated drinks and nicotine have a laxative effect, probably because they stimulate nerves that increase intestinal contraction. So if you had a block of cheese for dinner, this is a wonderful remedy. If you want to have a cigarette and coffee for breakfast, make sure that you have a clean toilet nearby. Why do you have to pee when you hear water dripping? Sorry, pal. Sometimes there just aren't medical explanations for things. Nobody in medical school explained why you get the urge to urinate when you pour gas into the generator. If you stick a sleeping person's hand in warm water, will he or she wet the bed? Going to bed at camp always felt like a risky time. The fear of having someone dip your hand in warm water and waking in a puddle was terrifying. There is no clear medical proof to this camp myth, but there may be some science behind it. It's known that when someone has trouble urinating, a warm bath can sometimes make it easier to go, perhaps because of a reduction of pressure in the urethra with the increased body temperature during a bath. A study from Egypt called Role of Warm Water Bath in Inducing Micturition in Postoperative Urinary Retention After Anorectal Operations described the so-called thermosphincter effect in 1993. We still don't know if the hand dip works the same way, but it sure would be funny to picture an Egyptian in the laboratory sneaking up on sleeping volunteers to try to get them to wet their beds. Is it dangerous to hold it when you have to pee? My junior high school biology teacher instilled fear in our young hearts when he told us that if we got into a car accident with a full bladder, the bladder could rupture. He was right. In general, a full bladder ruptures more easily than an empty bladder. This doesn't mean that your bladder will explode if you hold in your urine because your dad, husband, or brother won't make a pit stop. Our bodies have a non-voluntary reflex mechanism to prevent our bladder from getting too distended, called the micturition reflex. When our bladder gets distended, there are stretch receptors in the bladder wall that let us know that it's time to go. As we all know, this is not the most comfortable sensation if you wait too long. These sensory neurons cause contractions that can become strong enough to overcome the muscle tone holding the urethra shut and release all that urine. What causes the rumbling in your stomach when you have to go? Borborygmi. Borborygmi. Noun. Plural. Rumbling sounds caused by gas moving through the intestines. Certainly not a word learned in medical school, or that can be easily used in a sentence. These rumbling sounds are a normal part of digestion. They are generated from muscular activity in the stomach and small intestine as the food, gas, and fluids are mixed together and pushed through the intestine. This squeezing of the muscular walls is called peristalsis. Many people associate these sounds with hunger because they are louder and echo more when the intestine is empty. Yum! Instant messaging yet again. 9:07 a.m. Goldberg. Good morning. Lehner. All the best to you and yours. Give me one moment, just finishing an email. Goldberg. I'm just making coffee. 9:10 a.m. Lehner. Okay. Goldberg. Coffee and pizza for breakfast. 9:15 a.m. Lehner. I had a Slim Jim and a fermented mare's milk. Goldberg. It's hard to find good fermented mare's milk these days. Lehner. People should drink the milk of as varied a miscellany of mammals as possible. Goldberg. Did you ever sample human breast milk back in the day? Lehner. All those diverse antibodies are good for getting an immune system ready for the coming apocalyptic flu pandemic. Goldberg, I live in fear of the avian flu. Lehner, no, never sample that mama milk. I've tried to keep the birthing process and my sex life as far apart as possible. The whole avian flu thing seems like some Hollywood pitch, like Hitchcock's The Birds and... Goldberg, so, my brother, we need to finish this bitch and move on to bigger and better things. Lehner, what was that epidemic movie? Goldberg, Outbreak with Dustin Hoffman. Lehner, what are we doing right now? Are we IMing about something we need to be IMing about? Goldberg, not yet, really, just getting loose. Lehner, okay. Tomorrow seems not so good to work. Is Thursday any good? Goldberg, I am doing stretches at the same time. Lehner, tell me about Thursday. Goldberg, can't do Thursday. Working. 9:30 a.m. Lehner, one of those six-pack ab cover mags that men should do the recumbent bike in the gym and not the regular one that puts pressure on the cojones and the tender perineum. Goldberg, there is something about bike riding that can damage the pudendal nerve and affect your front end lifter. The tender perineum. Who wrote that? Fitzgerald? Lehner, I love when you conflate urology and heavy machinery. The tender perineum. Yes, yes, the unfinished F. Scott masterpiece. Goldberg, I never knew I could conflate. Lehner, poor slob, never had the chance to work out the denouement. I heard some woman talking about morning erections the other day. Goldberg, did you just spontaneously spell denouement correctly? Lehner, at a supermarket in L.A. Goldberg, I was wondering where you heard that. Lehner, yes, I spontaneously spelled it correctly. It's the coffee. Goldberg, I didn't know that people actually spoke in L.A. Lehner, this woman... enormous plastic L.A. tits and the face of a wizened gargoyle, said she won't touch a morning erection because it's not for me, she said. It's just a reflex. 9:35 a.m., Lehner. I guess people want to feel they've earned a change in some other human's physiognomy. Goldberg, L.A. is such a bizarre place. New Yorkers would take advantage of any erection. Why waste a good thing? Lehner, you know those commercials for that new Viagra, whatever it's called? Goldberg, Cialis. Damn, those people seem relaxed and happy. We should start our own pharmaceutical company. Lehner, why do they say, at the end of that ad, that you should report erections that last over 4 hours to your doctor? Maybe you should report them to the police. What's the danger of a 4-hour erection anyway? Goldberg, priapism, my friend. Priapism. Very painful and can cause permanent damage to the penis. Lehner, can you get a permanent erection? Goldberg, me, personally? 9:40 a.m. Lehner, that's funny. Porn stars are said to be able to get their erections back quickly. It's a vocational skill in high demand in the industry. What accounts for the difference in the refractory time for various men? Is that what that's called? Goldberg, it sounds so scientific. Lehner, that's the right term. I just looked it up. I'm so smart, don't you think? Goldberg, you could write a scientific article, The Refractory Erectile Period in the Porn Industry. Just as important as making it go up is making it go down for those embarrassing public moments. Lehner, speaking of porn, did we ask in this book, can women ejaculate? Goldberg, all we are doing is speaking of poop, porn, and penises. So sophomoric. Yes, and they can. 9:45 a.m. Lehner, that we're hardwired to launch our genes into the future before we decay in a puddle of excrement and putrescence? You think that's sophomoric? That's the whole comic tragedy of life and the central thesis of our book, yo. Goldberg, what is the thesis of our book? Lehner, the intertwining cosmic threads of poop and porn. That's string theory. Ever hear of it? Goldberg, I'm very slow on the keyboard this AM. I think my head is going to explode. Lehner, that we valiantly attempt to create poetry and architecture and pass along culture and bequeath our genetic heritage, all in the face of certain decrepitude and the abject indignities of old age and death. It's a grim struggle each and every day to maintain my dignity in the face of reading glasses. 9:55 a.m. You left the chat by logging out or being disconnected. Chapter 7. Medicine from the Movies and TV. The flurry of bathroom talk was cathartic, leaving everyone feeling purged and invigorated. Joel, with a newly found confidence, is leading a small group in a game of charades. Lehner, with the nearly empty tequila bottle in one hand and a fat cohiba in the other, is gesturing madly and attempting to act out a scene from Gone with the Wind. I mistake Lehner's gesticulations for a focal seizure, and I run across the room to administer first aid. The group assumes that this is all part of the clue-giving and continues to shout out movie titles. Lehner's face is contorted in a bizarre grimace as I assist him to the ground and protect his airway with a head tilt and jaw thrust. Lehner is now scowling, and I realize this is not a seizure, as Cinderella incorrectly guesses Spartacus. Joel shouts out, "Vision Quest!" And Jeremy quickly replies, "Dude, they're not wrestling. I think they're in love." Joel quickly responds, "The Birdcage!" And Cinderella guesses, "Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory." Jeremy turns to me and blurts out, "Are Oompa Loompas orange from eating too many carrots, or are those little bastards just using too much self-tanner?" Before I can respond, Eloise saunters over and astonishingly says, in a slow, wistful drawl, "It's got to be Gone with the Wind. I'd have a fit, too, if my $10 million Charleston bungalow burned to a crisp. Oh, poor, beautiful Tara." People often leave the movie theater filled with questions about what they've seen on the screen. After a thrilling episode of ER, I can always expect to get a call. Is the show ER accurate? Accurate. Adjective. 1. Correct in all details. 2. Free of mistakes or errors. Of course it's not completely accurate. It's TV. But the writing staff does capture the general controlled chaos of an ER. They deal with real medical cases, but their medical depictions are always embellished to add a little extra Hollywood flair. I did my residency in emergency medicine in Los Angeles when ER was just starting, and the writers often came by our hospital looking for new ideas. One patient I saw there was portrayed in an early episode and highlights the writer's taste for the dramatic. One day, a baby was playing with a coat hanger, and the tip of the hanger got stuck in the back of his throat. The paramedics carefully brought the baby into our ER with the hanger dangling from his mouth. This was, of course, very dramatic-looking, and we all rushed over immediately. The child was scared, but was breathing fine, and my fellow doctors and I did our best to just leave him alone and keep him calm. Rule number one of medicine, do no harm. An X-ray showed that the tip of the hanger was superficially caught up on the back of the child's throat. Now, for the big dramatic ending, we simply reached inside and removed it. Case over. On ER, however, when the glamorous doctors tried to remove the hanger from the child's throat, the baby started to bleed profusely. After an emergency tracheotomy, some miraculous bedside surgery, and a little on-screen romance, this child was just barely saved. Does the kind of amnesia you see in the movies really exist? Amnesia seems to be one of the favored topics of screenwriters for an easy plot twist. The lists of amnesia movies can go on and on. The Bourne Identity, 51st dates, desperately seeking Susan, eternal sunshine of the spotless mind, overboard, spellbound, total recall, to name just a few. The amnesia that doctors see is very different than the big screen version. Amnesia is best defined as a failure to retrieve information or to place information in an appropriate context. Amnesia rarely erases memory of all past events. No one suffering from amnesia actually goes through the rest of his or her life without an identity or any knowledge of the past. Memory loss is usually temporary and only involves a short time span of the person's life. Here are some types of amnesia. Anterograde amnesia, inability to remember ongoing events after the incidence of trauma or the onset of the disease that caused the amnesia. Anterograde amnesia often occurs following an acute event such as a trauma, a heart attack, oxygen deprivation, or an epileptic attack. Retrograde amnesia, inability to remember events that occurred before the incidence of trauma or the onset of the disease that caused the amnesia. Retrograde amnesia is often associated with neurodegenerative pathologies such as senile dementia and Alzheimer's disease. Emotional hysterical amnesia, or fugue amnesia, memory loss caused by psychological trauma such as a car crash or sexual abuse. Usually it's a temporary condition. Lacunar amnesia, inability to remember a specific event. Korsakoff syndrome, memory loss caused by chronic alcoholism. Post-hypnotic amnesia, memory loss sustained from hypnosis, can include inability to recall events that occurred during hypnosis or information stored in long-term memory. Transient global amnesia, spontaneous memory loss that can last from minutes to several hours and is usually seen in middle-aged to elderly people. Here are some movies that Hollywood executives would like to forget. Gigli, Ishtar, Howard the Duck, The Postman, and The Adventures of Pluto Nash. What would happen if you stuck someone in the heart with a needle, as in Pulp Fiction? Here are the words of Lance, played by Eric Stoltz, in Quentin Tarantino's Pulp Fiction. "No, you don't gotta fucking stab her three times, you gotta stab her once. But it's gotta be hard enough to break through the breastbone into her heart. And then once you do that, you press down on the plunger." No, intracardiac injection is not recommended for routine use during CPR. Translation: ER docs don't ever inject anything directly into people's hearts. There is an uncommon procedure called a pericardiocentesis, when a needle is inserted under the breastbone and into the sac around the heart to remove excess fluid. This is done when fluid or blood surrounding the heart is restricting its function. This is only done in serious emergencies. In Pulp Fiction, John Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson are trying to save Uma Thurman from a drug overdose by injecting her with adrenaline. Instead, they should have given her an injection of a medication called Narcan to reverse the effect of the heroin. Adrenaline, also called epinephrine, is often given during cardiac arrest, but only through a vein. Sorry, not as dramatic, but definitely less painful. Why does everyone in the movies go into shock? In the movies, and in the dictionary, shock can mean to strike with great surprise and emotional disturbance. In medicine, shock is a major medical emergency. When doctors talk about shock, we are referring to the failure of the circulatory system to maintain adequate blood flow. This requires rapid treatment, otherwise it can lead to death. There are a number of different causes of medical shock, including bleeding, hypovolemic shock, inability of the heart to pump enough blood, cardiogenic shock, severe infection, septic shock, and life-threatening allergic reactions, anaphylactic shock. People suffering from shock have low blood pressure, difficulty breathing, A weak, rapid pulse, cold and clammy skin, decreased urination, and confusion. So the shock that we so often see on screen should be more appropriately called freaked out. Can people really wake up after being in a coma for years? If real life were a soap opera, then the answer to this question would always be yes. Unfortunately, coma is a very serious problem, and although people do wake up, the longer they remain in this state, the less likely they are to return to consciousness. This is a very delicate question because doctors can't really predict which patients will wake up and which will not. If you look carefully in the original movie, Coma, you will see Tom Selleck, that's right, Magnum P.I., in a state of suspended animation. Recent movies like While You Were Sleeping, Kill Bill, and Talk to Her also used coma in their stories. The medical story of coma isn't as glamorous as Hollywood portrays. To begin, there are several different categories of coma, or disorder of consciousness. Consciousness can generally be divided into two main components, arousal and awareness. Coma is defined as a state of unresponsiveness from which an individual has not yet been aroused. Patients in a coma are neither awake nor aware of their surroundings. On average, coma doesn't usually last very long. After several weeks, most patients regain some level of consciousness, and if not, are classified as being in a persistent vegetative state. Persistent vegetative state is characterized by complete lack of awareness of self or one's environment. These patients can appear awake and even have their eyes open, but are totally unaware of their surroundings. Another category of consciousness is the minimally conscious state, an intermediate stage of consciousness, which indicates that a patient is somewhere in between a persistent vegetative state and normal consciousness. These patients can show intermittent signs of awareness. The locked-in syndrome is a rare condition that must be distinguished from disorders of consciousness. It is characterized by a complete paralysis of the voluntary muscles in all parts of the body, except for those that control eye movement. These patients can think and reason, but are unable to speak or move. Do you really need to remove a bullet right away, like they do in old westerns? It certainly would be dramatic if we had our gunshot trauma patients take a swig of whiskey and bite on their belt as we removed the bullet with a knife that had been sterilized by heating over a fire. I also would love to ride a white horse to work every day, but that doesn't happen either. In old westerns, there is an urgency involved with removing a bullet, as if this is the life-saving maneuver. In reality, doctors are not concerned with the presence of the bullet, but rather the damage that it does on its way in or out. We often see patients who get an x-ray for another reason only to find a bullet from a previous injury. There are some special situations when we worry about leaving a bullet in a person's body. When bullets or fragments are near large blood vessels, nerves, especially the spinal cord, or in a joint, then they can migrate and cause damage. In these cases, bullets are usually removed. People have also asked whether or not you can get lead poisoning from bullets that are left in the body. In general, lead fragments in soft tissue become surrounded by fibrous tissue and are therefore essentially inert. If a bullet is in a joint, there can be a problem with lead poisoning. A study in Los Angeles in 2002 looked at more than 400 patients who had bullets retained in their bodies. They found increased levels of lead in a small percentage of patients. Bullets or shotgun pellets are 50 to 100% lead, and people are more likely to have problems with lead poisoning if there are multiple bullets or multiple fragments in the body. Sorry to disappoint you spaghetti Western aficionados, but the old whiskey and leather routine is just for show. Is there really a medication that acts like a truth serum? Action heroes like Arnold Schwarzenegger often find themselves faced with an interrogator who uses a truth serum to get the hero to reveal his secrets. In the movies, our heroes are able to resist these potions and hide the truth. Hiding the truth seems also to prepare action heroes for a successful career in politics. They seem pure fiction, but truth serums do exist. Barbiturates such as sodium amytal and sodium pentothal were first used as truth serums in the early 20th century. These drugs inhibit control of the central nervous system and were used by physicians to help patients recover forgotten memories or repressed feelings. They are also used for patients with suspected conversion disorder, a condition in which psychological problems produce physical symptoms. An amytal interview is performed by administering a small amount of this drug intravenously. The drug produces a state of drowsiness, slurred speech, and relaxation. This condition makes patients more susceptible to suggestion, allowing the potential to uncover repressed feelings or memories. Today, these interviews are seldom performed. The truth serum will not necessarily make you tell the truth. Patients may lose inhibition, but will not lose all self-control. Therefore, they are still able to control their behavior and lie. Studies have shown that during these amytal interviews, patients often demonstrate a distorted sense of time, show memory disturbances, and have difficulty distinguishing between reality and fantasy. So the line between fact and fiction becomes even more blurred. What is on the rags that villains use to make their victims pass out? We've all seen it in the movies. The bad guy grabs someone from behind, places a rag over the victim's nose and mouth, and instantly the person slumps to the floor. This isn't exactly how anesthesia is administered in a hospital, but many people wonder if this rag trick is possible, and if so, what is the chemical on the rag? Chloroform and ether are the two possibilities. In the mid-1800s, both of these chemicals were being used as anesthetics. Chloroform is the more common substance discussed in these cinematic knockouts, but actually doesn't work as swiftly as portrayed. It usually takes several minutes to induce a state of unconsciousness with chloroform. Chloroform also causes a lot of side effects, including nausea, vomiting, and skin irritation. Ether was discovered in the 1500s and later used as an anesthetic. It was also used to treat respiratory ailments such as asthma. Ether became popular and turned into an early party drug that people used to get high. Unfortunately, ether can't deliver that dramatic takedown either. Another option for the quick movie knockout involves secretly dissolving a pill in a drink. This is often referred to as slipping a Mickey or a Mickey Finn. Spiked drinks, in this sense, contain chloral hydrate dissolved in alcohol. Chloral hydrate is a sedative that is used in hospitals today, often to sedate children prior to procedures. Other modern movie knockout options are the so-called date rape drugs, GHB, Rohypnol, and ketamine. Can you die from choking on your own vomit, like the drummer in Spinal Tap? In the movie Spinal Tap, Eric Stumpy Joe Childs, the second drummer in the eponymous band, died in 1974 from choking on vomit. As the movie reveals, the official cause of death is he died of choking on vomit. It wasn't his own vomit. He choked on somebody else's vomit. This event is said to have been inspired by the death of John Bonham, the drummer of Led Zeppelin. In 1980, Bonham was found dead after a drinking binge. He apparently had passed out and choked on his own vomit. This is a true and potentially dangerous possibility with excessive alcohol intake. Death from alcohol abuse most often occurs from aspiration. Aspiration is defined as breathing the vomit into the lungs, which causes the victim to essentially drown. Do people really have multiple personalities, like in Sybil? The 1976 TV movie Sybil was based on a book of the same name written by Flora Rita Schreiber. Both of these accounts were based on a real-life patient and psychiatrist, but recently there has been controversy over whether the real Sybil actually had multiple personalities at all. Other movies like The Three Faces of Eve, Psycho, and Me, Myself, and Irene have also dealt with multiple personality. Once this disorder was popularized in the movies, the number of diagnosed cases increased dramatically. Multiple personality disorder is no longer the term used to refer to this disease. It is now referred to as dissociative identity disorder, or DID. DID is defined as a disorder where two or more distinct personality states or identities alternately control or take over a person's mind. This disorder is a result of many factors, most commonly severe emotional stress. Can you get scared to death? You can scare the pants off someone, or be scared shitless, scared stiff, or scared out of your wits. But is it really possible to be scared to death? There is significant evidence that psychological and emotional stress can increase the likelihood of a heart attack. So it makes perfect sense that the stress of fear could lead to sudden death. In The Hound of the Baskervilles, a famous Sherlock Holmes story that has been adapted into film several times, Sir Charles Baskerville dies of a heart attack after being frightened by a ferocious dog. An article from the British Medical Journal in 2001 entitled The Hound of the Baskervilles Effect, a Natural Experiment on the Influence of Psychological Stress on the Timing of Death, examines whether this phenomenon is actually true. These researchers wanted to show that people are more likely to die of a heart attack when they suffer extreme emotional stress, so they focused on the death rate on the fourth day of the month. In Japanese and Chinese cultures, the number 4 is associated with death and is feared and avoided. This is not true in other cultures. When the death rates between Japanese and Chinese Americans and white Americans were compared on the 4th of the month, the researchers found that death rates on this day peaked in the Japanese and Chinese, but not in other groups. So it seems as though you can be scared to death. By the number 4, at least. Can you drink yourself to death like Nicolas Cage in Leaving Las Vegas? Even if you don't end up choking on your own vomit, alcohol is still pretty dangerous. The consumption of even small quantities of some types of alcohol, such as methanol or rubbing alcohol, can be fatal. With ethanol, the alcohol that is found in vodka and wine, for example, too much can certainly lead you to the pearly gates. People often wonder how much alcohol can be life-threatening. In medicine, we use the term LD50 to describe the dosage or amount of alcohol that causes death in half of the population. The LD50 for alcohol is equal to a blood alcohol concentration of 0.4 to 0.5%. That would be about 4 to 5 times the amount required to make you legally drunk. To give an example of how much drinking this means, a 100-pound person would need to drink about 10 drinks in an hour to threaten his or her life. Our bodies tend to protect us from alcohol-related death by vomiting or passing out. The danger occurs when you puke and faint at the same time. If you are brought to the hospital, we will protect your breathing and wait for the alcohol to move out of your system. Stomach pumping for alcohol abuse is a myth, since you do that yourself when you puke. Oh, and occasionally when it's a slow night in the ER, the staff will bet on who can guess your blood alcohol level, just to pass the time. Does hysterical blindness really exist? On an episode of King of the Hill, Hank accidentally sees his mother in bed with her new boyfriend and suddenly loses his vision. In the movie Hollywood Ending, Woody Allen's character has the same problem because he is so nervous about the film he has to direct. So does this sudden blindness really happen outside of the movies and TV? The answer is definitely yes. and it is not unusual to see these patients in the ER. Hysterical blindness can occur as a result of a psychological stress, a conversion disorder, or someone can intentionally fake blindness for some secondary gain, malingering, a prisoner who says he can't see in order to try to avoid going directly to jail. It is not difficult to figure out when patients say they are blind but can actually see. We have a simple test that lets us determine whether the eyes are functioning. Using a rotating striped drum, we test for something called optokinetic nystagmus. As the drum spins, normal eyes will be seen moving back and forth. If a striped rotating drum is not available, you can always use a picture of J-Lo's rear. Move it back and forth, and any normal eyes will follow. And so we instant message ever onward. Lehner, so? Goldberg, just sent you the blindness question. Lehner, okay, just got the email. I'm reading it now. Hold on to something of your own choosing. Goldberg, just hold on to what you've got. You've got a lot, girl, you've got a lot. Got a lovely feeling. Hang on, hang on to what you've got. I may have left out a hang on in that musical interlude. Singing doesn't really work on IM. Lehner, I think we need to explain just what that test is.